Welcome to Metacast. I am Josh Anderson.
And I'm Bob Galen.
Welcome back. We've been away for way too long. We're back in Bob's office in beautiful where?
We are in Durham, North Carolina.
We are officially in Durham?
This is officially Durham. RTP, Research Triangle Park.
Now, is Research Triangle Park a city, or is it just like this nebulous area?
It's a nebulous area. It has its own zip code.
Is it like Hollywood?
No. I don't think so.
But Hollywood's not. It's like a vanity name for a city or something like that, right?
It's a research park.
Okay.
Which is what the name implies.
Fair enough. I'm not insulting your work area. Relax.
It's okay. Yeah, no, it's beautiful. We have a pond here.
We do have a pond. We don't have frogs today, though, I think, because the sun's out.
We've done one Metacast here where you could discern frogs, couldn't you?
Yeah.
You told me
that. It was nice.
So we apologize to the audience for... We've been sort of lackadaisical. I think it's mostly Josh's fault.
So it is.
But mine as well. We haven't done a Metacast for a while. We apologize for going away. But we're back.
Better than ever.
Yeah. Amen. Yes. Yes, we are. So we are back. What's our topic for today, Josh?
Our topic is Agile and how it's affected us outside of software. So various things like, I know some people, it affects how they work with their family. Or it's, the biggest way it's affected me is how I manage.
So it could be family, it could be work related. I'm just saying, but has it changed us from a place, you know, like your management, your style?
Yeah, so to me that's what I'm talking about.
So has it really changed us personally? How has Agile affected us personally, as men, as leaders, as family men, inside the job, inside ourselves, inside our hearts, and things like that. It was sort of a reflective discussion. I bounced it off of Josh, and he didn't shoot it down.
Yeah, well, I haven't lost weight because of Agile yet, so until that happens, I'm not going to declare it all powerful.
That's being lean, I guess?
Yes, exactly.
So, for those in the audience who cannot actually see us, Josh and I are not good examples of, and I'll put myself out there, I'm a clear, amplified example of non-lean in practice.
So. Yeah, I certainly fall under that umbrella also.
And I don't think I'll ever get that lean.
It's tough, you know, I'm happy, you know?
That's what counts. So why don't you start, Josh? I mean, how is Agile sort of affected you in what ways?
All right, so the biggest thing is just how I manage my people. So I try and apply the shortened feedback loops. No one likes a surprise on your review when it comes around in January, February, or wherever your company gets around to it. So one of the things that I do is I have sprints with my teams and sprints with each person. And the sprints for that are basically a month long, so I have a monthly meeting with my team where we have a backlog of things that we'd like to work on. So it's not like tasks or anything like that, but it's stuff that we don't do well that we need to take action on. So maybe our code coverage isn't good. How are we going to do that? What are we going to do as a team? We discuss those things. We talk about standards. Somebody's not happy with a standard that we have in place and they think that this would work. So we tackle that as a team and we put that in place and we try it. You know, so the same Agile approach of, okay, let's try it for a sprint. Let's try it for a month. See if it works. If it doesn't work, we didn't lose that much. Let's tweak it and try and fix it and make it better next time and we'll do it again. And I apply the same thing with each person that is a member of my team. I meet with them on a monthly basis. We have a backlog of things that the two of us, are concerned about. And we try and make a little change here and there. So we just try and tweak it along the way. You know, we don't try and make an earth-shattering shift when you get that review that's a surprise negative review on, you know, February 1st and you try and change the world. You know, the goal is to make those little changes along the way.
That's sort of a neat approach. I didn't realize you were doing that. So you're making functional changes, what I would call functional changes with people who report to you at a team level and then at an individual one-on-one level.
Right.
So do you, like, measure velocity or stuff? Or how do you... And I'm not picking on it, but it's, I mean, I like
the, I don't. I have a mental happiness, right? So do I feel happy that we're making progress? So actually I had a meeting with my development leads today and we were talking about, we had this big backlog of all these things we want to take care of. And I said, okay, what have we gotten done? So we raised one issue last time, and we got it fixed. Our code review software, Crucible, was running painfully slow. So we ended up working with the IT folks. We got it upgraded, and it's saving each developer about an hour a day. So our happiness factor is every time we meet, have we knocked something off our backlog? So it's a internal velocity of one, right? We get one thing done. That's all we're trying to do. We're not trying to change five or six things at once because we know we're not going to get that done. So let's pick the most important one and work on it and make a change.
I think that's a cool idea, though. I haven't done that. I might borrow that.
You can. You should. I should patent it. I actually thought about writing a book.
Oh, you could write a book.
I did, but I don't know if I could get that done.
But I like that idea. You know what? I even like the, I think the happiness. I had a smiley face or a frowning face in my mind when you were talking. And this week I was at a conference. I was at the STAR conference. And I think someone was there, was rambling, or someone.
I'm sure someone was rambling.
I was rambling. but someone was talking about information radiators, like build information radiators. And they were just even, you know, you have red, green, and yellow or something like that, and you can have lava lamps or whatever.
Oh, I'm way past that now. You got to see what I've done.
But some have a smiley face. Or is that, oh, I know what it was. They were talking about it from a QA perspective. Is QA happy?
Mm-hmm.
Or is QA in a team? Or is QA sad? You know how you do the fist of five, and then what the fist of five drives questions,
mm-hmm.
and you talk as a team, and you talk, well, why are you sad? What would it take to get you to be happy? As a tester, I like that smiley face stuff. You know, as sort of a temperature check.
Yeah, we're doing something similar with our teams where all of our task boards and burn downs are virtual now. So teams have trouble getting a quick glance. How are we doing? So on the whiteboards that are in the team area, we have a list of all the stories that are in play for that sprint. And anybody at any time can take a red marker and circle it, and that's kind of the warning sign of, uh-oh, I'm worried. And so sooner, or worst case, the next stand-up, the team talks about that and figures out how to get back on track. So that's how we're trying to tackle that same thing, because dev would be going along, and they wouldn't be talking like they should. So somebody's raising a red flag. That's our red flag. I think actually somebody actually brought in a red flag and was waving it the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I like those indications of just, it's an alarm, either a positive alarm or a negative alarm, and to drive conversation at a team level, right? And that's sort of what the smiley faces were doing. And then you can drill into detail, and it forces the team to engage in something.
Right.
So, anything else you're doing with the team how about at home?
At home?
So have you lined the kid, are you doing daily stand-ups at home?
7 a.m. 7 a.m. The kids are to be clean, teeth brushed, fed.
No way.
Hair parted.
Are you doing that?
No.
Oh my God, you're scared.
No, heavens
with
no.
A backlog on the fridge.
I'm not done yet. It gets worse. No. We don't. I've thought about it, but I'd like to sort of disconnect at home. About the only thing that I do at work is in some of my writing. I try and have a backlog of things that I want to work on and then try and knock those down. I don't devote as much time to those Josh things he wants to work on as much as I'd like, but it's out there, so I don't have a regular rhythm.
You know, I don't think I've ever done backlogs so much like that. You know, I have to-do lists, but not backlog management in my personal, you know, my personal work habits or anything like that. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's...
You aren't eating the dog food, right?
Well, I wonder if it's that. I wonder if I'm not eating the dog food. I mean, maybe there's a place where you stop, though. Do you drive your kids?
Yeah,
I have folks who are actually doing scrum planning at home.
Wow.
And backlogs. And their wife is the scrum master, or their wife is the product owner, and they flop roles.
Wife is both.
Or the wife is both. and they're flopping roles and stuff. And you and I laugh about it, but they actually manage all their household to-do and chores via the backlog. Now, it's a small percentage. It's not very many, and they scare me.
Yeah.
You know, privately, these people scare me, and I'm like, I hope, gosh, you know, are they going to manage your entire life that way, right?
Right.
But I don't do that. One thing I do, I have found that I value from Agile is sort of immersion time. In understanding, you know, so lean principles are, you know, getting, not multitasking, And then focus really matters, finding focus time.
Right.
So one thing that I've personally, you know, I try to focus on is early morning. You know, this early morning is sort of my
time. Like 5 a.m. I get an email from Bob.
Yeah, and that's late. I mean, this morning I was up at like 3:50. Seriously, I'm up at 3.
What time do you go to bed?
Early, so I'm not up till midnight. So I probably go to bed around 9 or 10. But I'm up. The point is not my bedtime. Josh.
Sorry. We're trying to understand how this works.
Nor how ancient I am.
It's not a lot. Well, I didn't bring it up, but while we're on the subject.
Yeah. But the point is, you know, finding that place, it's called flow time. There's this Polish guy, Czuliński or something, Zbigniew Czula. I can't pronounce his name, but he's written a couple books about flow time. And I believe in that. I've seen that work in my life, where you find a place where you're in the flow,
right?
Where you're really, you maximize your productivity, and then I sort of try to leverage that. So when I'm writing, if I'm writing blog posts or whatever, there's times where, you know, and usually it's the morning for me, where I'm most productive. So that's a lean principle that we can bring, and I don't think we bring that enough up at work. I know as a coach, I talk about that to team members, but I think they think I'm being like some kind of a Zen. You know, it's too zenny for people.
Yeah, I'm a huge proponent of quiet time. So, like, scheduled time where there's no meetings, people are writing code, running tests, doing whatever they need to do. I've yet to get that in place where I'm at. I got that in place at my last job, and that worked really well. So I'm continuing to fight to get it in place where I'm at currently, because everybody, they're complaining about meetings. You know, like, well, we have too many meetings, then let's do something about it.
Yep.
Stop whining and do something. And here's a potential answer.
That's a common problem is folks complain about the meetings, but then I think they want to call meetings. It's almost like the catch-22. One of the catch-22s of Agile is that you want to collaborate, but I think most teams have too many meetings. And it's like, how do you collaborate and be really effective at
right.
it? Like, how do you have private time? Like, is it okay to have I think it's healthier than heck to have private time or quiet time.
Right.
But I think teams don't get that necessarily. They think they have to be, you know, constantly like at a whiteboard or pairing or something to be getting it done. I actually I consulted for guys going back to flow time, and they were trying to measure it. They were trying to measure in the zone time. So they had a tool that was actually sucking keystrokes from a developer's desktop and analyzing like what tools they were using. It was a little big brothery.
Yeah.
And they failed. They actually got acquired by Rally. So they're now part of the Rally tool set. If you've heard of Rally. Yeah. And but what was interesting is you could see the individual nature, you know, when you got through the big brother stuff, you could see trend data and you could see when people were like in their flow states. And people have different flow states. Some folks like in the afternoon, some folks in the morning. Like I'm a morning flow kind of guy, but not everyone's like that. It's almost like a personality type. And so one of the recommendations they were making is find your flow, find a period of the day when you're most productive, and then what? Schedule no meetings then.
Right.
Right. Don't interrupt. Go even work from home.
Right.
And they were getting a demonstrable like 4 times and 5 times productivity measure during flow time. It was that significant. I'm not exaggerating, right? So, and you can measure it in, you know, they were doing things like lines of code measure or debugging and bugs you were finding.
Right.
So you can measure it in activities and results. But I'm a firm believer in, like, that immersion time is really crucial. And I don't know if we get it that well enough. What are the practices? Any other practices you have at home?
I pair parent.
You pair parent? What does that look like?
Like pair development, but more parents. Beating the kids down, telling them to shush.
Oh my gosh.
No.
That sounded painful.
No, the thing that we're working on is actually trying to pair a parent. There's a lot of times when it's getting towards the end of the night, it's about bedtime, and the kids have to get clean, but they want their nighttime snack, and they'd like to watch, you know, Electric Company or Dirty Jobs or something like that.
Right.
So one of us will say, yes, you can do this, but not this. And then one of us will say the other, right? So that's, we aren't collaborating as well as we should as parents on that. So then we get conflicting messages and dirty looks across the sofa. Like, wait a minute, Dad, you said I could do this. And Mom's saying I can't do that. So we're trying to fix that problem because we're sending conflicting messages and we don't like that.
Well, clarity of communication.
Yeah.
Maybe clarity of, I mean, probably roles, and one thing Agile's good at is goals and roles and things, right?
And it's tough because we don't ever want to present it as a non-united front, right?
Oh,
so we don't ever...
it's a chink in the armor.
Yeah, right. It's tough because we unknowingly do it.
Yeah.
You know, so trying to prevent ourselves from shooting ourselves in the parenting foot with that, you know, is the challenge.
Well, even here, one of the development managers here where I work, he sent out an apology notice and that he had canceled some staff meetings. And he's like, you know, he was really, and he's new, and he should have had these meetings. I agree with that. So he's like, sorry, guys, and let me take you to lunch today. Actually, they're out to lunch today. We're recording this on Friday, by the way. So he sent this out to the team, and I, as you know, you sort of know I'm a sort of a smart guy.
No.
I try to stir up trouble a little bit. So I sent something about a response and like, yeah, and you know, are we going to Angus Barn or something like that for lunch? Because he was talking about doing it on his dime. And so I was just, you know, brewing the pot. But the team, we have a very millennial-oriented team here, right? A generation millennial team. So I'm like joking, but you know what? The team didn't take it that way. They're like, I was overhearing folks today, and they were like, oh, you know, well, not only I haven't heard anything back, so I'm assuming we're doing lunch today, and I'm also assuming that it's, and they went down the line, I'm assuming it's on him, I'm assuming it's, we can get whatever we want, and I'm assuming that we can, and it is at the Angus Barn.
I've never been to the Angus Barn.
It's a pretty pricey steakhouse.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. It's not a good lunch locale, and I was clearly stirring the pot. But it's a unified.
Obviously
pot.
Not clearly.
But you know, there was a chink here, man,
yeah.
and I suspect the entire team is out there like milking it for whatever it's worth, right? So any of those cracks, you do have to be careful of.
So it sounds like you need to take him to the Angus Barn.
Or just give him cash as an apology, right? Give him just cash in hand and promise to keep my mouth shut.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. But it's that leadership, it's that consistency of leadership example at work.
Yeah.
And I think folks, you know, I think folks would always challenge it or take advantage of it. But I think the millennial generation probably will take advantage of it even more, right? They have that view of, oh, yeah, there's an opportunity there for...
Yeah, absolutely.
For
the door's open, walk through.
Absolutely. Personally, I think where I've, you know, from a management style perspective, and it's hard for me, I find... But I'm more trusting, and I sort of go with the flow, and I've always had that management style, but in Agile, it sort of makes you can't oscillate very much. You can't fall back. You have to, you know, I think if you're good at it, you have to stand on your convictions. You have to stand on knowing, you know, supporting the Agile ways, even when you're in crunch mode. You know this. Even when things aren't going very well. So I think my trust is higher than it used to be. So Agile has really encouraged me to be more trustful. To be a better coach. Trusting doesn't mean you just let people stand, you know, walk all over you,
right,
or anything like that. But hold accountability. I think I hold accountability more. I trust the teams more. I tolerate failure more. Delegation. We've talked about
right.
this in past metacasts. And it's not just that I do it more, but I think I'm better at it. It's probably like wiring. I'm probably wiring myself so every time I encounter a situation where my insides are like...
So you're saying you can teach an old dog new tricks?
I think you can teach an old dog new tricks.
Really,
right?
Old dogs?
Even so, age came back to haunt me again. I had left it open a crack. Speaking of those cracks, and people walk through it.
But I guess I'm part of that generation.
Yes, indeed you are. And you put a foot in that door and saved it for later.
I did.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not just—it's not teaching me. I've always had that. I think I've always had that trait, but I'm amplifying it a lot more. And it's really—and I can see it outside of work. You know that. You know, I'm goal oriented. We're scheduling some work around the house, or we're having folks come in and quote. We're getting a patio in the back.
Ooh, nice.
And a screened-in porch. So we're talking about getting a patio and a screened-in. We have a deck, and we want to.
What kind of patio?
What did they
like call a paver? Like
paver. I love paver. I love pavers. I love the look of those pavers.
We got to talk after this, my friend.
What, really?
Yeah, that's what we're doing next year. So I want to.
Oh, okay.
Leech off of your mistakes.
Exactly. But it's, you know, what's key for me is I'm not worried about it's you know how you want to set up the project. What's critical is setting up the project with goals and with what you want and getting the plan there, and not so much
priority.
And priority, and not so much what paver goes where and exactly, and trust their expertise. So I've talked to Diane, and I'm like, you know, we need to hear them now. What are they going to recommend?
Right.
Because this is their expertise, but I want to set them with goals. We're setting them with constraints. I don't think we're going to hover. Years ago, I would have hovered and watched the project. I don't think I'm going to hover the project, but what am I going to do? Is it done?
Right.
I'm going to hammer on, here's the doneness criteria. So how do we set up the project? Let them go, and then I'm going to evaluate.
Are you going to get frequent feedback? Like, you're going to look at it every night, or are you just going to come back at the end?
I'm going to look at it. No, I think I'll give them feedback, but I don't want to, you know, I don't want to hover.
Right. You don't want to micromanage.
I don't want to micromanage it. I want to see, you know, but again, like to your point, you know, if the paver pattern is not what I want, right. I am not going to wait
right.
till the very, oh, I wanted a spiral pattern, and you gave right. me the jumping horse pattern, right? I'm afraid that's not what I want.
Yeah.
That's not, but you know, those agile characteristics, I think I'm bringing back into the way I'm mentally managing the, or thinking about managing that project. And I think that's a healthy, it has changed me from an old dog. I am more trusting. I am more entry and exit criteria based. Mm-hmm. I care about quality on this thing, right? If it costs a little more, I want them to tell me.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want them to short shrift quality and hide it from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already said that to them. They're doing a game plan now. They're doing an information rating, or they're doing a design.
Right.
And I think of that. So we agree on what? The design. And I think in that case, it's a good idea for us to have a picture in mind to make sure that we agree, not the details.
So it sounds like you're the product owner there, clearly.
Clearly product owner, but also, you know, some of those other behavior, the non-micromanagement behavior, the trust, not even just trust. I'm like, you know, guys, step up.
If I'm paying for this,
I'm not just paying for you to lay pavers. I'm paying for you to, like, what, you know, out of the last 100 jobs, you know, what are some patterns you're seeing? What color pavers are you seeing that work better over time? I mean, you know, have an opinion. Make some recommendations. You see this in our teams.
Right.
Sometimes folks are reluctant, you know, to do that. And being a good product owner, I think, you know, ask the team. It's like, what do you guys think? And understanding those boundaries. So that's an area I think I've mellowed. The other thing, you know, and I'm emphasizing the failure. I think something I want to see, and again, we talked about this in another Metacast, is I want to see more failure. I'm more tolerant of failure, small failures, but learning failure, failing forward.
Failing effectively and trying new things, right? It's always like people just, I get really frustrated when people just keep doing the same old thing.
Right.
You know, it's like, let's try it. And if we fail, we fail. But we don't fail big, we fail small.
It's even an indication of being open-minded. Open-minded to try new, to try new things. It amazes me why people are afraid. Oh, well, management, it's almost like folks make up reasons in their mind, like inhibitors or blockers. They're not even there sometimes.
Well, it's the vision of management as they have from TV shows, from movies.
You know what? Isn't it true?
All that
it's not just from the, it's not just from the building that you're in.
Right.
It's your perceptions of what management is.
Right.
Or the hearsay. You had a beer with some guys from another company,
right.
You know, friends, and they're telling about their management. I think it's much more, you know, yes, there's a reality, but it's a perception base.
Yeah.
It's like what they think.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly a overwhelming negative picture of management in media, popular media, so movies, television, all that stuff. You know, so that certainly breeds that. So then that's another battle we have to combat a little bit, but because I do get that. You know, I was in a meeting today and said, well, is management going to let us do that? I'm like, is it the right thing to do? You know, then that's what we should do. You know, so it's still fighting against the heavy top-down and command and control and all that stuff that that I'm still trying to fight through. There's a big mental model change where I'm at that I'm trying to change just because people were hired and that's what they were hired to do. You know, and that's what they've been doing for the past X number of years. So here's this new guy coming in and saying, well, we're going to do it a little bit differently. Like, yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, so.
As an aside, it's funny. I've actually worked in places where they try to wait out the new guys, Josh. You know, they actually look at it and they say this. They're like, you know what, I've been here for 20 years or 15 years. I've seen 10 of you come in. And all I've got to do is what?
Right, wait it out.
Just wait it out. It's the most amazing. And if they ever stopped and looked at it through a mirror and said what they said, I think they'd be ashamed of themselves, right? Because what are they saying? I'm not going to change. I'm not going to adapt. I'm not going to listen to any idea that's not, you know, the way I've done it before. It's like a turtle syndrome or something
right.
like that.
Yeah. Right?
But I don't think they see themselves as turtles, but if they can see it.
Well, no, they're right.
Right?
They're right, we are wrong.
Yeah, yeah, it's sort of interesting. For folks in the Metacast, I want to share something that was private. Josh and I were discussing this before the meeting, or before the Metacast, and he postulated that 90%, I think the term
95.
Was it 95?
95.
All right, so I'll
be quiet for about...
So 95% of the content of the Metacast is driven by me, and I just don't know. So I wanted to get that out there to see what the audience, the one or two of you who are actually maybe doing some arithmetic, what you see about the balance. Because I know I talk a lot, but gosh, 5% seems like a small number. So in the spirit of that, though, I want to give the stage to my esteemed, you know, so where else? I'm trying to give you your stage, and I'm trying to zip my lip.
I really wish I had like a cricket track that I could just flip on, because I don't know how to handle this undue pressure.
But you're the coaching. You're doing more. You're doing a lot of coaching. I mean, you're actually, you know, doing collaborative coaching across different groups and things. Like
yeah, it's but as far as back on the personal piece, you know, the things I mentioned are the things that I felt were appropriate to apply. And that's, you know, it's not a silver bullet. I think you and I have said that about 1,000 times since we've known each other. So I don't try and use it to fix everything. I try and use it to fix the things that need a little bit of process. You know, just a little bit. You know, it's not a lot of process. So trying to find the right bit to slide a little bit of something in there to help me. Like with my writing, you know, I'm really going to push myself to get more regular on my activities, because I can't make any progress if I'm working on it pretty hard 1 week and then not the next week, or on and off, or on and off. So my flow time, is that the official Bob Galen term?
It's in the flow. It's
in the flow.
Mm-hmm.
About the only time that I can do that, so I almost have to force flow if I want to work on a personal project, is from like 10 to midnight, you know, when the kids are in bed and the wife is finally falling asleep on the couch watching Biggest Loser or right. American Idol or something right. like that, and I've gotten the hay out of there because I don't want to watch those.
The same way, even though it appears that I'm, you know, it's, you know, I need something to motivate me. I'm doing several blog posts on different media, and I get a ping. The editor of the blog sites where I post, you know, thank goodness he pings me. And he gives me like a week or something like that, you know, or 5 days or whatever.
Right.
But he gives me that ping, which is the like, oh crap, I've got something to do, right? And then I usually procrastinate. So, you know, he wants it by this weekend, and I'll procrastinate.
Have too. You started?
No, of course not. I just got the ping today, right? So I haven't started. And then when I did the product ownership book, it was the excitement that I put an outline together and I sort of like tap danced around it. And then I hit this level, like you're saying, of commitment. And then I just sort of, I didn't write it in a day, but I wrote it in like, in a month. And it was an immersed month.
Right.
You know? And every day I was really like, I was encouraging myself / forcing myself to kind of slog at it and get it done, right? It's that tempo.
Right.
I think that tempo thing really matters.
Right. And that's where I need to get is I need to get that tempo, just the rhythm of getting in that groove, getting that long-term flow. Right, I think I can get the short-term flow for a couple hours, but I got to get the long-term flow down to where I can really actually get something done. you know, because I'm not. Yeah. I'm the 90% syndrome with all my writing, so I got to push it over the top.
Yeah. I think another area, just chiming in, again, I don't want to exceed my 95%.
It's too late.
It is.
We don't have enough time for me to make it up.
Damn, I hate it when that happens. But just what you and I are doing, I wouldn't have thought of doing this. So Agile, to me, has fostered friendships and collaborations, both national and locally, that I don't think I would be doing if I wasn't in Agile. So it's a side effect of being Agile. I think the community is just a really neat community. Mm-hmm. Agile is not necessarily just a methodology. It is almost like a Zen-like thing. It is almost like a martial arts thing where I think folks are getting it. I don't think it's going to be a fly in the pan.
Right.
And I think it's something that it's this fundamental internal change of how we do work as software engineers, but also how we deal with each other, you know, like transparency and openness and, you know, passion around it and sharing. Have you noticed that it's more community-based?
Yes, it is. It's kind of in the same mindset as open source.
You said it much more succinctly.
So that's why I only get 5%, so I have to really deliver in that 5%. So it's that same feeling of, okay, we're going to do this together, we're going to make it happen, we're going to make it better. So that's, to me, it's in that same field of community-driven.
It's personal, right? I don't look at, you know, so RUP, I don't know if you've ever used any other methods, but I used RUP, Rational Unified Process, and it's a formalized process. I didn't care about that personally at all. I mean, I might write about it, but I looked at that as being like a work thing. That was just a process model on the wall.
Right.
And when I left the building, I left it behind. And I don't look at Agile that way. I look at Agile as being something that I can apply, and that's what we're talking about. You can apply it personally, aspects of it. It's like open source. You're very collaborative. It's very team-based. And you learn from each other. It's a very friendly, community as well, and trying to help one another out.
Except when you have a hired Agile coach flake out and not fly to Toronto when he's supposed to. Then you have to cancel your plans.
That was a job. Right? That was beyond the passionate level of it.
Yeah. So,
what about quality? Do you care more about quality?
I hate quality.
I know you do.
No,
I can feel that from you. Testers as well.
Oh well, test managers, test directors.
You're very development centered, biased, Josh. That disappoints me.
I'm sorry.
I can't help it. I can't help but share that.
So,
has it changed your view of quality, though? Not just software, quality in general, doing it right the first time.
Honestly, no.
Were you always a do-it-right-the-first-time kind of guy?
I was very lucky to be raised in the software development world by people that believe very strongly in that. I've been accused in my development days of over-commenting.
Okay.
You know, so I was one of those guys that I like standards, I like the process, this is how we do it, and we're all going to do it this way because it's easier to read, it's easier to maintain, it's easier, blah, 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 blah. So it actually hasn't, just because the folks that raised me, like I said, were, they had me mind-washed.
You know, they are very similar in many ways, but in that particular way, because I've always been very sort of, we probably came at it in different ways, clearly.
Well, you had punch cards and things like that, and
those environments forced you. If you had ever dealt with like punch cards and stuff, what it says is if we're executing a program for the first time, it's going to take an hour, and it's going to take you a day to get the feedback from the run. Then making sure that the bits,
right,
making sure that the code is right. So desk checking it, inspecting it, running through like almost like on paper execution. When I used to do assembly, you could almost like fill registers. You could do the algorithms yourself, and you would do it on paper, and you would run through or simulations. One of the things that were big back then is simulators. So you would actually simulate like step almost debuggers, where you could step through code. But doing that in advance was important because you know, the resource time, the utilization time wasn't free, and you couldn't always get it done. So every run was like special, and you learn to like appreciate, I think, quality.
Yeah, I was raised like it was forced into my brain, that cost of change graph.
Yeah,
you know, the exponential cost of change. It's like that was on my desk, like on day one. So it's like, we want it to be here, not here. So let's get it right the first time. So I've carried that around with me. You know, it's not physically, but in my brain, that's always the thing that's really up front and said, let's get it right the first time.
Yeah.
So
the compliment to that, to me, is this just enough. So these leanish principles is the what's been freeing to me. I've always been sort of anal, and it's, I want to do a really high quality job, but I've also, and I'll say it here on the Metacast, probably never again, I've been known to gold plate.
So no.
I know. But I've gold plated.
We all are.
And I polish things beyond what was necessary. And my heart was in the right place. It was quality, right? I was trying to do a really solid job. I mean, I'm a perfectionist. And I think a lot of developers have a perfectionist tendency. But what's been freeing to me is what is hold quality, but quality, you don't have to do it. You don't have to do everything. You don't have to implement everything. It's sort of this iterative just-in-time. Mm-hmm. So that's the freeing part. So what you do, it says, don't do everything. But what you do, what you choose to do, what's a priority, do it well. And that's that freeing thing for me. So I've actually gotten more time back, whereas I would, you know, if I'm writing a book, I'm going to try to, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I'm sure I would have I'm going to hammer on each page before to get it perfect. And I could do it, you know, my per page time frame could be like a day per page.
Right.
And now I'm more comfortable at writing, refining, iterating, coming back, right, moving forward, creating bodies of work and stuff. And so it's freed me. I'm still have those perfectionist tendencies, but it's allowed me to move forward. And that agile principle has really helped. That's probably the one that's helped me the most. Is sort of balancing between them, what doing it well, but not doing everything.
Right.
How about you? Lean?
I'm not lean. No, I don't not, even not like lean bacon.
No, not physically.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can't get past that today.
So are you a just-in-time kind of guy? Can you deal with iterative, just-in-time deliverables?
Yeah. I think just, again...
Like your kids are going out, I'll give you a picture. Kids going out in the yard, and they step off the porch, and you don't see them. So just-in-time, you go out and you mow the lawn so you can actually visibly see the children.
I have some guardrails, right? So I am huge on shoes, right? On have shoes on. You know, and not flip-flops. I don't like my kids running around in flip-flops. I've seen way too many stubbed toes. And I'm not even keen on Crocs, even though they actually cover the foot.
They do cover the foot.
That is one of my non-debatable points. It's like, we're going to do 2-week sprints, you know, and we're going to do it. That's
so
it.
So you have some foot-related guardrails.
Yes. Shoes on. Shoes especially on. When riding a bike.
Oh, well, I can buy that.
A scooter.
Yeah.
Or just running in the street, because we live in a cul-de-sac, you know, so that's...
Have you lost any toes in your childhood or something?
No,
you scarred in some way?
I spent, from the ankles down? Actually, yes. I spent, you know, about 5 years of my life surrounded by 300-plus pound men with steel spikes on the bottom of their shoes.
shoes on.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I'm with you.
That's a bone of contention for my wife and I. My wife is a major flip-flop gal. So she's like, yeah, put the flips out.
Well, in the South beginning. Especially, right? Down
yeah,
here.
You know, me from Northeast Ohio in the snow, it's like you got to have your boots on until June.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that, you know, nothing crazy.
So anything else that we've learned that Agile we've taken? I think trust, part we've talked about trust, collaboration.
Here's a just-in-time.
What?
The Metacast.
Okay.
We didn't have a plan for what we were doing when we walked in, right?
You know what? We've never shared that with the Metacast community. That we are for, and they could go back and look at it and listen and see what the differences are. But we talked about our first Metacast, we planned more. Was it the first one?
The second one. The first one we kind of walked into it and said, let's try it and see what happens.
You're right.
And then the second one, the process kicked in.
The process kicked in, and we overplanned, or we planned. Actually, not. We planned.
It was almost like we had a script.
We had a script, and from our perspective, I don't know from everyone else's, but it came off as artificial, or it came off as scripted. But every other Metacast, we have an idea, and the way we start it, so just in time, Josh and I might exchange an email or two. There's very little information. It's a couple sentences of an idea. We come into the Metacast, which is really a topical idea, like we did today, of internal learnings. We don't even exchange what we're going to talk about, and we just like put the mic together, plug in the PC, and we turn it on. And we seem to fill one of our notions or observations is we seem to get around 50 minutes of content, and then we sort of poop out.
Yep, we peter out. Yeah,
and it's very much just in time, and so far it's working. And we've talked about not making we've been pretty reflective about this. We haven't had formal.
We've retrospected,
but lightly, light retrospections, but. We sort of like the model so far.
Yeah, it works.
I think it'll poop. I mean, it might poop out eventually, where we might need a little bit more stuff. But again, we have a list of topics as well.
Well, I mean, I only get 5% of the time, so I've got lots of content backed up.
I've tried to give you the stage. I don't know if you've noticed that. I've tried, so I don't know. So I've tried to give you back another 5%. So it's only 90-10.
I
would be very afraid to do a word count, like study of the Metacast, because it would just, I'd probably shock, you know.
Realistically, it's at least 60-40, I'd say.
Oh, the fact that I dominate? Now, do I think it's 50-50? No. I'm not saying that.
What do you think it is?
If I were to force to guess, I'd say about 60-40.
60-40.
And I'd be shocked to see it was probably 70-30.
Yeah.
Is what I'm thinking.
I'd say in best case, it's 60-40. My more realistic guess is 75-25.
Yeah.
And a large part of that is, hello, welcome to Metacast.
Oh, the accoutrements. Oh, my God. No, everyone on the Medicaid, it bugs me because I want to be fair. I love Josh, and I love these exchanges, and I want to give him his due as well. So I'm going to work on it. I'm going to work on it, guys. So are we wrapping up?
We're
wrapping up. So this is from beautiful RTP. We want to thank you for listening in. We'd love it if you could give us feedback on any of the Metacasts. Not forget the percentages, although if you want to do the analysis, that would be welcome. But really it is on topics you'd like to hear us talk about, areas you'd like us to explore more deeply, or not so,
yeah,
or exactly. not so deep. Anything, Josh? What about websites and things
websites,
like that?
Websites, we are at meta-cast, that's the actual symbol, -cast.com. And on Twitter, we are meta-cast, hyphen spelled out once again, because Twitter doesn't like non-alphanumeric characters. So we're not going to be on Facebook. Facebook, if you read the interwebs, is having all kinds of privacy issues, so there's not going to be any fan pages for Metacast, as much as we all want to be fans of Bob Gale, and I am. But not officially on Facebook.
I don't think I have a Facebook page.
Me either.
I've not warmed up to Facebook.
I'm a huge Twitter guy.
But I'm an old dog, so it takes time for the old dog to move.
It is.
So we want to thank you for listening in. Give us your ideas. Dial in. Get us feedback. And when are we going to do this next?
Dial in.
Get us feedback. Shut up. Yes.
Maybe we should get a number and host calls and take feedback.
I think we need a little more traction. I think we need probably more than like one listener or something.
I really need that cricket track.
We do need a cricket track. We don't know what we're going to talk about next time. Like we said, it's a just in time. So the good news there is you can influence us with some just in time discussion. And we, again, we're not going to go away for as long as we have the last time. So a couple weeks, Josh, what do you think?
A couple weeks, yeah. I'm in California next week, and then we'll do it the week after that.
You know what? bring back some stuff from California. So
I will.
I think California Dreaming will be the general topic, and you'll drive the Metacast.
I better find a Beach Boys song.
With California inspiration.
Okay.
Everyone, we want to thank you. So this is Bob Galen.
Josh Anderson. Shake.
And bake. Take care, everybody.